6640.
Your future lies in 6640.
66 books by 40 authors, and yet we now discover it's an integrated message system from outside our time domain.
Welcome to 6640, Chuck Missler's daily program connecting the Bible to your life and the world around you. It's God's plan that began before time, and it's your future. It's a plan that includes you. Now here's the host of 6640, John Leffler.
We frequently hear the statement about the separation of church and state, meaning there is this wall and the church should not in any way whatsoever or any kind of religious beliefs, whether they're Christian or Jewish or Muslim or other, be influencing what goes on in politics, and that government should leave religion alone. Well, what was it that the Bill of Rights actually said about this? Welcome to 6640. For the last, 40, 50 years in this country, we have been undergoing a process called historic revisionism or historical revisionism, designed to rewrite the supposed facts of history to match new politically correct outcomes and then teach those as if these were the original teachings or beliefs of the country. If you look at history books from just 50 years ago and look at history books today, there is a tremendous difference between what is written then and now. As a matter of fact, you may not even recognize some of the history as it has been rewritten, history through which you live. Dr. Chuck Missler is presenting a very small series here this week, The Religious Influence in the Founding of the United States, which goes all the way back right to the arrival of the very first people here with Cristobal Colón, Christopher Columbus, well over 500 years ago. Religion played a role in politics and the country everywhere, right up until recent times when suddenly we were told that that was not the case. Somebody's rewriting something here. Dr. Chuck Missler, his series, Thanksgiving, America's Challenge.
Well, tonight I'd like to examine some of the unique blessings that you and I are blessed by. Some things that you and I have cause to be especially thankful for, but also to earnestly solicit your prayers relative to some of these blessings and some of our responsibilities for stewardship that derives from these blessings. And one of the questions that will emerge from our discussion tonight is, do we really have, here in America, a constitutional republic? That's the formal answer to people in the know. I mean, you know, what are we? We're not really a democracy in the usual sense. We are a constitutional republic. Or are we a fascist state posing as one? And if so, what are the implications for us as Christians? Where do we as Christians stand concerning what some people would call political activism? Now, how fashionable it is today to argue that, you know, well, we really weren't a Christian nation. Nonsense. Nonsense. We could go on. I won't concatenate a whole list of these. We'll mention a few of them. But let's take one of the more important ones. In 1776, an interesting document was signed called the Declaration of Independence. How many have heard of that? Okay, good. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator. That's an interesting phrase if you think about it. That's in the fundamental document creating this nation. It's a basis for the rest of it, that we are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. This is a major conflict going on today in Washington. Our rights do not come from the government. Our rights are given to us by our Creator. It's the purpose of the government to preserve them. If you're trying to create a fascist state, the reason they have to be atheistic is because they have to disconnect your rights from God. They have to maneuver this around so that you end up believing your rights are granted to you by the government. Wrong. And there's a war going on spiritually in this country, and politically on the hill that I'll come to before we're through. The Declaration of Independence manifests that there is no such thing as relative values. There is such a thing as truth. men's rights do come from God, and the government simply exists to protect these rights. That's right in the Declaration of Independence. Now, it's interesting that George Washington, 1787, said, regarding the Constitution of the United States, says, let us raise a standard to which the wise and honest can repair. The event is in the hand of God. Repair in terms of retreat to is what the old word meant, in the hand of God. Thomas Jefferson, on his memorial, it says, God who gave us life, give us liberty. Also, can the liberties of a nation be secure when we have removed conviction that the liberties are the gift of God? Jefferson raising those issues. 2 Corinthians 3:17 says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Our liberties are all tied up with God, not the Congress, the Senate, the Supreme Court, what have you. In 1789, since we're approaching the Thanksgiving season, I have to mention George Washington's Thanksgiving Proclamation, which includes these words, whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. George Washington, Thanksgiving Proclamation, 1789. A few years later, in his farewell address, he said, and let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. These are so basic, most of us took that for granted in school. We had to write our silly little essays for the English department, grammar school, junior high, whatever. And they're so basic, it didn't sink in. Today, it better, because they are aggressively being challenged by your adversaries. Patrick Henry says, it cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians. Not on religions, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. Wow. And we could go on with more of these, but I think you get the flavor of it. Well, John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the United States, that Providence has given to our people the choice of their rulers, and it is the duty as well as the privilege and interest of a Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their rulers. Do you have a feeling we've drifted a long way from that kind of a presumption? Well, obviously, as you can tell, we could go on for hours with these quotes. If you haven't seen David Barton's materials, he's got an incredible ministry, really good, well-done materials. I encourage you to pay attention to them. There are several specific ones I'll come to in a little bit. But anyway, after the revolutionary period, of course, the nation had won its right to exist, but the struggle, of course, was far from over. The faith of those early years after the Revolutionary War began to lose its vitality. The church had lost its traditional role of spiritual leadership. The arrival of peace after a long ordeal, the explosive prosperity of a republic with no enemies and apparently limitless natural resources, and then ministers who had once again made conditions for conversion so burdensome that many churchgoers despaired of ever joining the ranks of the redeemed. It was a prosperous period, but not a spiritually strong one. And then a few years from that, the French would trigger their own revolution, boasting that unlike America, their new republic could achieve the brotherhood of man without the fatherhood of God as a prerequisite. And their version of republicanism flattered the man into believing that his own intellect reigned supreme. And its proponents made a new secular religion, and its evangelists, among them Tom Paine and others, brought their faith to our shores with missionary zeal. And because there was no strong, vital, appealing Christian faith that opposed them, almost overnight their cynicism made astonishing inroads to the centers of our own creative thinking. And an anti-spiritual revolution rolled over the land. But as always, God raises up a few courageous men that made the counterattack. There were the Soldiers of the Cross, the Methodist circus riders that, like Whitfield and company earlier, had wanted nothing so much as to be on the stretch for God. And these in the frontier, Presbyterian and Baptist preachers, carried on the battle. And God did shed His grace on America with a tremendous outpouring of the Spirit, which became known as the Second Great Awakening. in the wake of this revival came movements, the likes of which the country had never seen before. Foreign and home missionary societies were founded, innumerable charitable institutions for the deaf and the blind, the old and the destitute, and the orphaned and the mentally ill emerged. Reform politicians won their elections with landslides, and all kinds of temperance leagues and so forth flourished and so forth. But these movements barely kept America on the rails and off the abyss. In the meantime, the North had become very industrialized. The South, with its humidity and heat, was relegated somewhat an agricultural role. The West beckoned the small farmers from across the country. And eventually, these sectional interests came in conflict. But in the background, of course, was a spiritual matter. And even though there were flesh and blood contests that would contest it, the real battle was a spiritual one between principalities and powers, and the impediment, of course, was slavery. This is not abstract history. There is threat of a different, in fact, in some respects, more insidious kind of slavery continuing today. And the thrust of socialism is squeezing its grip on America's soul. I want to suggest, just as on that field outside Gettysburg, the real matter at hand for you and I is our resolve, yours and mine, that this nation under God, that the government of the people, by the people, and for the people, shall not perish from this earth. This is not a partisan issue, although it'll appear to some like that. There is something far deeper going on that you need to be aware of and prayerfully consider what your response should be. Because from the time that Columbus started on, there has been a struggle between the forces of light and the forces of darkness, if you want to use those phrases, from the beginning. And if, as both the Pilgrims and the Puritans believed, that God had a special plan for America, then the dark prince of the planet was aware of the plan and doing everything in his power to thwart it. And what they needed back then was enough committed Christians to get the job done and make democracy work. Democracy is not a natural form of government. It is supernatural. It relies on the Judeo-Christian ethos to provide continual spiritual renewal needed to inspire selfish men to be selfless. And the framers of the Constitution understood that. They understood man's fallen nature, and that's why they created our unique system of checks and balances, which are not operative today. They're being run roughshod by the judiciary and the executive branch. It's presently creating laws, not through the Congress, just by fiat. And there's only a few people that are starting to ring the bell here. And so Proverbs 29:18 says, where there is no vision, the people perish. And what you and I need to pray for, that men of vision will rise up in our culture, in our land, in our Congress, in our Senate, to have the guts to challenge the tide that's in front of us. God has blessed us from sea to shining sea, but the question is, what's happening? It used to be one of the things in America that America's founded was religious freedom. Religious freedom. I have here a letter from James Dobson, October 1997, and it focuses specifically on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA, which was struck down by the Supreme Court on June 25th of 1997. This legislation had originally sailed through the U.S. House of Representatives in 1993 by unanimous voice vote, and then was approved by the Senate 97-3. Out of 535 legislatures, only three opposed it, and I am told their objections are based on some, even those, were just based on some technicalities. You can imagine how unusual it is to get liberals and conservatives, Democrats and Republicans, Ted Kennedy, Jesse Helms, Newt Gingrich, and David Boehner, and subsequently the President of the United States, to agree on anything, much less a matter with religious overtones. Yet there was hardly a dissenting voice. Clearly, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was considered vital to the protection of the historic liberties guaranteed our citizens by the U.S. Constitution, and it was struck down by the Supreme Court. They're overruling the intent of the Congress and the Senate. On what basis? Now, what makes this significant is a steady erosion of religious rights imposed by the courts in recent years. since Engle versus Natale and Abington versus Shep decisions in 1962 and 63, which banned teacher-led prayer and Bible reading in public schools, the U.S. Supreme Court has been increasingly hostile to faith and of traditional moral values. And Chuck Colson has said that America is being ruled by a runaway judiciary. And Dave Barton has a little book, I think you can get it in any Christian bookstore, called Impeachment. Subtitle, Reigning in an Overactive or Overreaching, I think it's the term, a judiciary. Small book, well produced, and it will startle you to know that not only is the mechanics of the Constitution to deal with this, but it's been done on a dozen occasions in the past. Most people don't know that you can impeach a federal U.S. Supreme Court judge. And there's a desperate need that we do. The Congress won't do it unless they feel their support from the electorate. We need to have our voices heard. And we could go through a whole list of these things. Stone versus Graham prohibited public schools from posting the Ten Commandments on their bulletin boards, despite the fact these same commandments are depicted on the walls of the Supreme Court building. Roe versus Wade, you all know about, legalized the killing of unborn babes, which has now resulted in the deaths of more than 30 million defenseless, voiceless infants. This now amounts to 1/8 of the population of the entire United States. In this ruling, the court disregarded completely the will of the electorate, most of whom in 1973 considered abortion to be a violation of every standard of morality and decency. Romer versus Evans struck down the initiative passed by the people of Colorado that would have prohibited the passage of laws and ordinances granting special rights, as opposed to basic civil rights, to homosexuals. In this decision, Justice Kennedy said, quote, "Laws of the kind now before us raise the inevitable inference that the disadvantage imposed is born of animosity toward a class of person affected," close quote. In other words, Justice Kennedy was lecturing the people of Colorado for their bias and bigotry toward homosexuals. By declaring their view unconstitutional, the court trivialized a moral conviction held by Christians and Jews for centuries. It also rendered Americans unable to protect themselves from organized efforts to gain advantages and preferences in the workplace. The minute you start giving special people special rights, they in effect have seceded from the electorate. Our asset base as a nation is degraded. Edwards versus Allegard, in which the court rejected a Louisiana state law that required public schools that teach evolution to also teach creation science. Evolution is a conjecture with no data to support it. Creation, as a minimum, is an alternative conjecture. But one is not. One is allowed, one is not. On what basis? Certainly not scientific ones. Lee versus Wiseman, in which the court ruled that the public school officials cannot include prayer as part of a graduation ceremony and cannot specifically select a religious participant to say a prayer during a graduation ceremony, even if the prayer is not sectarian. It reminds you of the twice in the book of Proverbs that says, there is a way which seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death. And that same phrase is used in the book of Judges to describe Israel at its nadir, its lowest point spiritually, when everyone did what was right in their own eyes. So how shocking it is that these bizarre myths are now being enforced upon us by our judiciary. So on we go. Now, we are living in a land in which the federal government is enforcing a form of paganism on the society and on the schools. The mind reels in an attempt to try to understand the insanity of paganism. No one knows how much of the substance of life has been poured out before the graven images of time upon the stained altars of the gods who are not and of the demons who are. The statues of the deities are few, but the gods of the mind are many. You can't help but wonder, how did we get into this predicament? How did we go from where we started to where we are today? What happened? Early in this century, many intellectuals in our society became enamored with the doctrines of Freudianism, the materialism of Feuerbach, the nihilism of Nietzsche, the dialectic of Hegel, and the communism of Marx. And that's perhaps the strangest one. You've got a German in a London museum calling to action the French proletariat that's picked up by the Russians, a group that he disdained. But Satan has his ways. And then obviously came behaviorism, socialism, existentialism, do your own thing kind of. rationalism, Fabianism, humanism, and on it goes. If you haven't seen David Breese's book, it's still around, I believe, The Seven Men Who Rule the World from Their Graves. It highlights the impacts of Charles Darwin, Karl Marx, George Wellhausen, Sigmund Freud, John Maynard Keynes, Soren Kierkegaard, and of course, John Dewey. It was John Dewey's humanism, his atheism, and amorality and evolution, the rest of it, and one world socialism that permeated our educational system and excluded from our textbooks the moral and biblical teachings that was the bedrock of our American culture. And despite our strong spiritual heritage, of course, our prosperity and feeling of self-sufficiency led us to create, for our own pleasure, an immoral society. We turned our backs against God. And big surprise! So we had a decadent, pornographic, licentious, violent, godless society in which today people fear for their own safety, not from roving random violence, but from the government itself, and with the threat of enslavement by the godless hoodlums that have seized power in this country. In the middle of all this, we are being plunged into what I call the age of deceit. And determining the real nature of the reality around us is a cornerstone of our living. A man puts into practice tomorrow what he believes today. And to believe in the wrong model of history or the wrong purpose of living can lead to grievous errors, great tragedies, and devastating consequences. And the correct or true view of man, God, and history is the key to sanity, survival, and the fulfillment for all of us. And I'm going to suggest to you that all of us need to work very hard at reexamining our assumptions that govern our society, our nation, and our families. And when you do that, you'll come to a disturbing shock, and that is that virtually all of our presuppositions turn out to be not only false, but a result of deliberately promoted lies and deceit. Now, in any cultural war, truth is the first casualty. And experience shows that if one persuades our impressionable young people that facts don't really exist, or that history is always arbitrary, then solid ground can be replaced by anyone's brand of quicksand. And that's what's going on. And we have thieves of our history. There's a new thing called the National Standards for U.S. History. Think about what that means. That's not like an amnesia-inducing drug to be administered on a national scale without hypodermic needles. This idea of standards for history was first introduced by the Bolshevik and Nazi parties, and it was successfully deployed by the Third Reich and the Soviet Empire. To those that would take over the world, one of the main problems they've got is that they've got to neutralize American attitudes, principles, and traditions that are always have been the object of hate by our arch enemy. In the Soviet occupation, which followed the Nazi occupation, the same henchmen jailed the same people for the same crime. That is listening to an American broadcast, whether it was 1944 or 1952. Now, the loss of two world wars and the Cold War should make it clear that neither the technological genius of the Germans or the numerical advantage of the Soviets were sufficient to carry the day against American resolve. But we had resolve in those days. We have a unique heritage. Some of us have it by birth, and some of us in this room had to transcend hardship to claim it. But all of us are stewards of our traditions and our heritage. And knowledge of them and respect for them have served us like a protective armor. And yet we're supposed to countenance the creation of generations who will be naked and defenseless. And we are in a war that began a long, long time ago, but is now honed in on its ultimate objective, and that's the soul of this country. Now, let's take a look at some of our basic conceptions in our society. The first one, of course, is evolution. Here's a concept without any scientific evidence, but leads, of course, to some real questions about how can you have any self-esteem if you believe you're here by a random act of chance.
Thanksgiving, America's Challenge, part of a mini-series being done by Dr. Chuck Missler here, examining the history of religious influence in the founding of the United States, going all the way back to the arrival of Christopher Columbus. Obviously, the program that you heard today is only part of our entire series, which is a five-part series, and it is available for you here if you'd like the whole series on a two-tape set, which comes complete with study notes if you call us toll-free, 1-800 K-House 1, 1-800-KHOUSE, and the number 1. This series, Thanksgiving America's Challenge, is also part of a Holiday Favorites CD-ROM, which is available from Koinonia House. This has all of the files in MP3 format that lets you load them onto your iPod or your MP3 players, and includes not only Thanksgiving America's Challenge, but several other series as well. And it's also available from us here at Koinonia House. Our toll-free number, 1-800-KHOUSE-1, 1-800-KHOUSE, pretty easy, K-House, and then the numeral 1. And finally, if you go to our website online at khouse.org, this series, Thanksgiving America's Challenge, is also downloadable there, khouse.org. While you're at the website, don't forget to sign up for our weekly e-news brief that comes to you free by email just by signing up. For first-time subscribers, we'd like to get to know you a little better. If you call our 1-800-KHOUSE-1 number, tell us you're a first-time subscriber. We'll put you on our monthly mailing list for free for the personal update, our news magazine. That's 1-800-KHOUSE. And then the number 1. Next time, Dr. Missler will continue this series, Thanksgiving America's Challenge. Don't forget to pray for us here at Koinonia House. Pray for those suffering for their faith around the world that suffer persecution. Until next time, I'm John Leffler.